Hi, I'm PJ Vogt, and I want to tell you about my podcast, Search Engine. We try to make sense of the world, one question at a time. No question too big, no question too small. We will even answer your questions if you send them in. Stuff like, what happens when a cemetery goes out of business? What should we do about teens using AI to do their homework? Who buys luggage at the airport luggage store? Follow and listen to Search Engine in partnership with Odyssey, wherever you get your podcasts.
Broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studio. Presented to you by your local Hyundai dealers. This is where Chicago goes to talk Bears. Sports Radio 670 The Score. Chicago's home for Bears fans. WSCR and HD Chicago. WBMX HD2 Chicago. Always live on the free Odyssey app. The Score!
Now it's time for Inside the Clubhouse, a show dedicated to the Chicago baseball fan, featuring the best Chicago baseball conversation, as well as the big MLB topics, along with the biggest names, greatest guests, and listener interaction, starring Score baseball insider Bruce Levine and half of Chicago's number one sports morning show, David Haw, on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station presented by Bet Rivers Sportsbook.
Welcome into the show, Inside the Clubhouse here on 670 The Score here in Chicago. This is not David Haw. This is Ryan Porth, assistant brand manager of 670 The Score, producer of the Beat the Streak daily podcast, Inside the Hits, along with Matt Spiegel. For the next 2 hours, talking baseball alongside the great Bruce Levine. Bruce, how are we doing this morning?
We're doing great, Ryan, and just wonderful to have you on. David, taking the weekend off, working pre- and post-game for the Chicago Cubs radio broadcast and network. It's going to be great to continue to hear him there. And it's great having you in on the show. I know you have a tremendous baseball background doing the executive producer and co-host of Beat the Streak podcast presented by MLB and BetMGM every week is great. So welcome to the show, and welcome to what might be the most important week for Chicago White Sox baseball in 2022. It's going to be a week of having to win. It's going to be a week of people who watch the White Sox and care about the White Sox having great angst. And in my opinion, Ryan, it's a week where they must take, they must win five in a row here. They must sweep Detroit the rest of the weekend here. And Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, when Cleveland comes to town, they must sweep the Indians. People will say, Ryan, well, Levine, you're nuts. First of all, you can't predict sweeps of five in a row. But Detroit, as we saw last night, is a very vulnerable and weak team, and it was a shame the White Sox lost. And moving toward the Indians series Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday at the rate on the south side, you can't win two out of three. You win two out of three, you pick up one game. They need to sweep the Indians coming in. Your thoughts?
Well, the team can't really approach it that way, right? I mean, they got to take it the one game at a time, the cliche. We can sit here and say they got to win the next five, but if they go out tonight in Detroit and try to win the next five, they may lose again against a very weak Tigers opponent. I would tend to agree that you have got to win these next five games. You probably, out of your last 17 games, have to win 13 or 14 of them to give yourself the best chance possible to win the AL Central and make this comeback. And like you said, the three against Cleveland this week, I mean, you cannot give up one of them for the tiebreaker purpose. So if you only win two of three, Cleveland still wins the tiebreaker of head-to-head for the season, which means if you tie them at the end of the season for the division, Cleveland ends up winning the division and moving on to the postseason. So I would tend to agree. And last night, Bruce, that was a game that the White Sox could not afford to lose. And for seven innings, the shutout, tossed by Matt Manning of the Tigers, the White Sox offense looked anemic most of those seven innings. Eighth inning, they get a jolt from Jose Abreu, the two-run double to tie the game. But after that, Bruce, the Sox went hitless in their next eight at-bats, their final eight at-bats of the game. And I want to break down this 10th inning with you. It's tied 2-2 in the 10th inning. Josh Harrison, the nine-hole hitter, due up first for the Sox, Luis Robert pinch running at second. Some were surprised that Cairo did not bunt there with Josh Harrison at the plate. And here was Miguel Cairo's explanation after the game.
I didn't. If I would have bunt right there, move it over, I was, you know, land, he's nasty. You know, we got Andrew coming up and Monkey, he throw a lot of sliders. So I was just trying to, you know, you visitor. So I want to be aggressive. That didn't work out.
So that was Miguel Cairo last night after the Sox loss in 10 innings. Bruce, were you surprised in live time that a bunt was not called for Josh Harrison?
I am, but, you know, you have the same advantage in the bottom of the inning with a man on second base. So for Detroit. So one run in some people's minds, not really good enough at that point. You're going for an inning. You're going for driving in that run that's already in scoring position. That's how they look at it. They got three hitters to drive in that run. Other people say, hey, you got to try to get that one run. You can't think that Detroit's going to score necessarily because they have a man at second base to start the bottom of the 10th. But it's worthwhile noting that for the first time since taking over for Tony La Russa, you're starting to get people involved in the fact that Miguel Cairo is not necessarily going to go 162-0 if he's the manager of the Chicago White Sox in 2023. You're still going to take exception to getting the job done by players and managers putting the players in position to get that run in to get the job done. The fact remains from this. The White Sox offense is still, even though it's been better over the last 2 weeks, still suspect. They get shut out by a bad Colorado team on Wednesday. On Thursday, they beat Cleveland and beat them soundly, a game they had to win, and kudos to them for doing it. And then yesterday, they scored 2 runs in 10 innings against one of the worst teams in baseball. And if you watch that whole game, Ryan, you saw so many opportunities for the White Sox to score more runs because of bad defense by Detroit. Detroit's are they're not only one of the worst offenses in baseball, they're inept, okay? They play losing baseball. And to lose to them, you know, I'm the first one to say every bad team's going to win 60 games no matter what. And you might be the one team that they beat that shouldn't have happened. But in reality, that's a game that you're supposed to win, and you're supposed to win that game pretty easily yesterday. So from that perspective, I think the reality that the White Sox are still the White Sox and they're not scoring 7 runs a night is something that you have to deal with here. The one thing about the White Sox I still like, and I've liked all year, they get predominantly a very good starting pitching performance every single night. And that's what's kept them viable. Their defense, their offense, their base running has not been that. The offense has been better lately. Your thoughts, Ryan?
Well, Lucas Giolito, I thought, was better last night. I didn't think he was great. I thought he was better than the average Lucas Giolito throughout the season, which has been a roller coaster for him. But yeah, I mean, Johnny Cueto, what a pickup that was right before the season. He's been fantastic. We all know Dylan Cease is in the hunt for the AL Cy Young, although last night Justin Verlander coming back with 5 no-hit innings in Houston with 9 strikeouts. I think Verlander is starting to grab a stranglehold on the Cy Young, but Cease has become an ace. Lance Lynn is pitching really well. He pitched really well Thursday in Cleveland. So, yeah, I mean, pitching, for the most part, this season has kept them in this race as dysfunctional as that team has been all season long.
So the show theme today is, do the White Sox have to win the next 5? Do they have to sweep Detroit and sweep Cleveland? 312-644-6767. Cub fans, we haven't forgot you. Chris Bryant in town with Colorado. He's on the IL. We don't know if he's going to play the rest of the year, recovering from plantar fasciitis in his right foot. Not sure if he's going to play. Cub, question to you is, a year and 2 months removed from the Bryant, Rizzo, and Baez non-signing being traded, was that the exact right move for Jed Hoyer and the Chicago Cubs. 312-644-6767. Ryan, with the Chicago White Sox still continuing on this weekend here, I'm just looking at the rest of the weekend. You put it well. You can't think about winning five straight when you have to win the game tonight. But that, you know, they are, they have to be realistic about where they're at. Ryan, it has to weigh on them knowing that they're five games out in the loss column with 17 games to go.
Yeah, it's a pressure cooker for the Sox, for sure. I mean, these next two games, you have to win. And we see teams all the time, whether they're leading a division by a few games or trailing by a few games, September is a pressure cooker for a lot of teams across Major League Baseball. Perhaps we're seeing that here in the last five games for the Sox kind of weigh on them. They've lost three of these last five games. We'll see what they do these next couple of games. But you've got this huge series looming at home against Cleveland. If you win these next two games, I think no matter what Cleveland does, you're putting yourself in a position where if you win those three games against Cleveland, you're putting the pressure on them the rest of the way in the final 2 weeks. But, I mean, when you look at Fangraphs, Bruce, I mean, Fangraphs, looking at the percentages, the odds to win the AL Central, Cleveland 83.3% and the White Sox just 11.7%. And then you have Minnesota with a distant 4.9% chance of winning. I've already counted them out. Minnesota's not winning the division. It's either the Guardians or the Sox. And last night, whatever good vibes you had after Thursday, when you went in there and just rocked Cleveland with all those home runs, it looked like, it felt like a statement win for the Sox. All those good vibes, poof, gone. You had a chance to beat Detroit in extras. You went down looking. If you're Elvis Andrus in the 10th inning, Yoan Moncada strikes out, and then the bottom of the 10th inning was just a blunder for the Sox. They could not get out of their own way there. And you lose that game. Cleveland storms back to win at home against Minnesota late in that game. And, again, all the good vibes that you had from Thursday's win are gone. You're back in the same position that you entered Thursday in, which is four games back and time running out.
You know, the Indians, okay, minus one for me. The Guardians obviously started a young pitcher. They weren't going to disrupt their rotation against the White Sox. They probably knew they were going to lose that game. They had a good chance of losing it. They didn't care. They were not going to disrupt the rest of their rotation moving forward here over the weekend against Minnesota and then into the White Sox series next week. So they were positioned to lose that game. I don't think they felt bad about it. I don't think they worried about it. It was a good sign for the White Sox to hit five home runs. They took care of business, give them credit for it. But it just shows you, you know, the NFL mentality of baseball at the end of the year. You know, it's like you have to win this game. As you pointed out at the beginning of the show, you don't always win this game. You know, you don't always... You're not always going to be able to do that. That's just the way it goes. And again, 312-644-6767. Do the White Sox have to go on a streak of winning five in a row to be legitimate going toward the end of the season here? Those three games with the Indians loom large next week, but they still have to get by Detroit the next two.
Well, let's listen to Liam Hendricks, what he had to say after the game last night. Again, the Sox know they're behind the eight ball here down the stretch. They lose this game in extras. At this point in the locker room, when they're being asked questions, they know Cleveland has beaten Minnesota. Here's Liam Hendricks on trying to catch Cleveland this late in the season.
Yeah, we still got three against them, and we've got some guys that we have played decent against. So as long as it'll all even out at the end of the day. If we win, we have a chance, and if we don't, then we don't. And that's something that we need to take day by day. We can't look ahead and look at the scoreboard every time because it just gets disheartening sometimes.
So, I mean, Miguel has preached that pretty much, that just focus on what you guys are doing. Don't worry about Cleveland or Minnesota.
It doesn't matter. If we win, it'll all settle up. If we win more than most, if we win every series, we've got a good chance, and that's all that matters. It's never too late until we're eliminated.
So you can
that even. Yeah, let's stop saying it's too late because it's not too late until we're eliminated.
That was Liam Hendricks last night after the loss for the White Sox. Bruce, your reaction to what Liam Hendricks had to say there after the loss, where they're now four back of Cleveland?
Well, you know, it's what you have to say, and it's how you have to think. I mean, you can't think five games like we're talking about here on the show. you have to think about the next game. You have to remember that he's being talked to after he pretty much lost the game himself yesterday because of bad defense. You know, he just he fielded a bunt, looked towards third, nobody was there, threw a bouncer to the first base that was wide of Abreu. He couldn't come up with it. You have a horrible situation there in the bottom of the 10th where you, instead of a man on and one out, you have first and third and nobody out. And although he pitched well to get to the third hitter and had got two outs, you know, fly ball ended it for him and they lost the game. So he wasn't very happy with himself or the situation, but I don't think Liam Hendricks lost the game for the White Sox. The White Sox being inept at taking advantage of a bad Detroit team throughout that game was the reason why they lost.
Yeah, especially offensively. When you think of the tiebreaker conundrum that the Sox find themselves in, where, again, they would have to win all three against Cleveland this week to win the tiebreaker in case they tie at the end of the season for the division, think back, Bruce, to that May 9th game at home against Cleveland, where they're up 8-2 in the ninth inning, and the Guardians come back to win that game in extras 12-9. Possibly the craziest game that we've seen from the Sox this season, which there have been a lot of them. That one game back in May, if the Sox close that out, I mean, they wouldn't be behind the eight ball as much as they are in now. It's crazy to think about it like that.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. That's a huge game. I just think of the head-to-head is huge, as you point out, but I just think of, you know, so many different games. The game that Engel couldn't catch the ball in foul territory in the ninth inning against Baltimore, and they come back and win it. The game where Engel and Moncada both failed to tag up into the most unbelievable triple play that anyone's ever seen in history, where both guys miss tagging up and both of them get tagged out going back. There's been a lot of really horrible losses for the White Sox this year, predicated, Ryan, on the fact that their offense, for the most part, has been out to lunch. It just hasn't been there this year. This team was never set up to play close games. Yes, they had good starting pitching. Yes, they have a very good bullpen. But no, they weren't set up to be trying to win 3-2 and 2-1 games every night. That is not White Sox baseball. White Sox baseball is what you saw on Thursday. Out-homer the other team, okay? Bludgeon them. Not having little things for one-run games impact you losing a ball game that you should have won. That just hasn't been White Sox baseball. And a lot of it has to do with injury, which is not their fault, to Eloy and to your center fielder. With those guys being out as much as they've been out this year, it's had a tremendous impact on the team. The ball being dumbed down by Major League Baseball this year, home runs being down, Abreu sitting on 15 home runs, even though he's had a great hitting year, he hasn't had a great OPS year, a great run production year. So from all of that, it's been a different White Sox team in 2022.
It's been a mad.
Your true crime podcast keeps listeners on the edge of their seats. But here's the real mystery. Why isn't it making more money? Odyssey Creator Lab is here to solve that. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on the suspense while our sales team brings in advertisers and revenue. Stop leaving money on the table. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and turn your passion for true crime into real revenue.
Ending. White Sox team here in 2022. You're listening to Inside the Clubhouse. Ryan Porthen for David Haw this morning alongside Bruce Levine. Bruce, you want to squeeze in a call on the Sox here?
Absolutely.
All right, let's go to Rusty in Orlando, who's listening to us here on Inside the Clubhouse on 670 The Score. Rusty, welcome into the show.
Hey, thanks, Ryan. Good morning, Bruce. Great morning. Show as always. I enjoy listening. Unfortunately, this year, in my 67 years of being a White Sox fan, has caused me to become a caller, which I'm I feel better after I get it off my chest. Listen, last night's game was just a microcosm of this season. The Sox are just a fundamentally poor team. I disagree. He should have been bunting. Josh Harrison should have been bunting. You have your nine-hitter up. Hasn't had a great year. Then you have Andrus, who is basically single-handedly, along with, well, him and Eloy, kept him in things the last couple of weeks. And then Moncada, who is just an enigma. But that being said, you know, this team is, just when you think you're out, they pull you back in, and it's just the most frustrating season that I can ever remember. And while they're not mathematically eliminated, you still have to believe and you still have to hope. I just want to address what I believe needs to happen. I think immediately upon them being eliminated, whether it's during the regular season or during postseason, if they make it, they have to announce that Tony La Russa is going to become a consigliere and move upstairs into the box for the remaining year. I do believe that they need to terminate all their coaches. If you want to bring back Ethan Katz, I have no problem with that. If you want to bring back the lifer, longtime White Sox player and coach, Darryl Boston, I have no problem with that. But this team is the worst in fundamentals. They can't execute a relay. They can't defend a bunt. They don't know how to bunt. They're the worst base running team, and that's all coaching. I still don't know what Jerry Nairn and Shelly Duncan do for this team. Maybe they're nothing more than seatmates for Tony, but I think you start there. Then you, I believe Rick Hahn has to take a little bit of a bullet here. Don't forget, all we've been talking about all year and all offseason was the money will be there. Yes, they have the seventh largest payroll, but that's with some really bad contracts, and it's only going to get worse next year.
Yeah, thanks, Rusty, from Orlando for calling in. Bruce, I mean, there you have a longtime White Sox fan saying that, you know, the 67 years of his White Sox fan, well, and this is now making him a caller here on 670 The Score because of how frustrating it is. I mean, it's just unbelievable how crazy this season has made White Sox fans.
Well, Ryan, you're right. And, you know, a close friend of mine just texted me. Someone would know, but he'll remain unnamed at this point, just said, it's roster construction, okay? Are they constructed to be able to play small ball when they can? Are they constructed to be a good defensive team? Are they constructed to be a good base running team? To me, I've said it all year, the White Sox are of the old vintage White Sox of good starting pitching and power, okay? That's what they're predicated on, a power hitting team. No left-handed power because of the fact that Grandal, whether it's a bad knee or he's just fading, has not been able to supply it when he's been out there on the field this year. He was the main source of left-handed power last year. So, you know, the roster construction is not enough left-handed hitting balance, and the power hitting right-handers have not been out there due to injury and not being the players that they were in the past. Home runs and starting pitching. That's what the White Sox used to be. They used to be that way for a long time, a very good team, but not a winning team as far as championships go before Ozzie Guillen got here. When he got here, him and Kenny Williams came up with the idea at that point, and Rick Hahn was a part of that front office too, that, hey, we have to be better. We have to have more speed. We have to have better defense if we're going to win. They addressed that with the first big trade of trading Carlos Lee to Milwaukee for Scott Pesednik. That changed the entire 2005 year. It changed the entire mentality of White Sox baseball. Okay, so from all of that, the White Sox are a two-dimensional team to me, a power-hitting team and a starting pitching team. The bullpen's pretty good. I mean, they fortified it. Hendricks has been great, but honestly, you know, as the caller said, they have to address defense. They have to address base running. they have to address roster construction regardless of what happens the rest of this year.
It is definitely a talented yet flawed team for the White Sox, who tonight in Detroit, again, they are under a lot of pressure to win almost every single game here on out. They'll have Johnny Cueto starting tonight opposite Eduardo Rodriguez for the Detroit Tigers, 5-10 first pitch for that one. The Guardians have a doubleheader today against the Twins, 12-10 and 6-10 start times. Before you play Cleveland this week, the Guardians will play 4 against the Twins, and you will play 2 against the Tigers. So definitely need some help from Minnesota up there in Cleveland. Coming up next, the Cubs won 2-1 yesterday against the Colorado Rockies. They got a good outing from Marcus Stroman. P.J. Higgins of the Chicago Cubs will join us here on Inside the Clubhouse. We are coming to you live from the Score Hyundai Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. I'm Ryan Porth, in for David Hall, alongside the great Bruce Levine. Keep it locked here. P.J. Higgins is next on Inside the Clubhouse on 670 The Score.
I think we have a bunch of younger guys, especially guys who haven't necessarily established themselves at the big league levels, but are going to be guys that will establish themselves and be everyday big leaguers and be guys that have big years. So that's what you're seeing in the guys that we're bringing up. It's they're getting an opportunity, and when you have an opportunity to play every single day, you can kind of showcase your true potential and your true true star in you, more so than when you're getting platooned or not getting everyday opportunities. So, yeah, I think these guys are kind of showing what they're capable of, and I think it's awesome because I think we're going to have a ton of depth within the next few years in this organization.
That was Marcus Stroman following yesterday's 2-1 win for the Chicago Cubs, commenting on all the young players that the Cubs have in their lineup and in the rotation, in the bullpen, all across the roster right now here in the final weeks of the 2022 regular season. This is Inside the Clubhouse. Ryan Porth for David Haw this morning alongside the great Bruce Levine. And joining us now is one of those young players, P.J. Higgins of the Chicago Cubs. P.J., thank you so much for joining us here on 670 The Score. How are we doing this morning?
Yeah, very good. Thanks for having me, guys.
PJ, you guys are playing good ball this week. You went into New York. The Mets have been one of the best home teams all season long. You sweep the Mets. You start the series against the Rockies yesterday with a win. What's the mentality right now in that clubhouse as you guys are entering this final stretch here?
Honestly, I just think we've been playing just a solid brand of baseball. I mean, our starters have been pitching exceptionally well. I feel like collectively as a hitting group, we've been swinging the bats and having quality at bats and working deep into counts. And I just think playing good defense behind our pitchers, making a lot of good plays defensively. And I just think collectively playing a really good brand of baseball. And that's why we're having the success that we're having.
Ryan, Pete, I've been wearing out PJ all year, going to his locker, getting insight from him. And PJ, one of the things I asked you the other day, I want you to talk about on the air, and that is when you heard about the rule changes coming up in Major League Baseball for next year, I immediately went to you and asked you about, you know, what it's like in the minor leagues right now with pitch clock. Can you enlighten some of our great listeners and people that listen to our show across the country and the world about what it is like to have to react to, as a hitter, being in the box for 8 seconds and getting in there in 8 seconds, and how it is for the pitcher-catcher combo to be ready to throw the pitch in 15 seconds?
Yeah, I mean, I was able to, early on this year when I was in AAA, to experience those rules, and basically, I got used to them while I was down there, and I mean, it is quick. It's a quick adjustment to make. The games do go by faster. I'm not going to lie about that. But I think the biggest adjustment is being able just to try to gather yourself as quick as possible and then create a plan and then go execute the plan. And then with that's with hitting and getting in the box, make sure you're looking at the pitcher right away. And then for the pitcher-catcher, that was a bit of an adjustment because it does speed you up in terms of, I mean, we don't have pitch comm there, so it speeds you up in terms of getting the signs. And if the pitcher shakes, then you got to make sure that they're going before the time's out. So that was a bit of an adjustment at times, but we were able to get through it.
PJ, one follow-up on the pitch clock. One question that I've had this week in thinking about that rule change is how often is Major League Baseball actually going to enforce it, you know, throughout games? From your experience in AAA, how often was it enforced? Was it a daily, a nightly deal where you're thinking about it, where umpires were enforcing it, or were they a little lax on that?
So I think, like, the first couple weeks, it was like trial-based, so they kind of let us do our thing and kind of get used to all the rules settings, but once the rules were actually implemented, they were pretty strict on enforcing those rules, and once they started enforcing those rules, I'll be honest, like, the adjustment that was made by the players, there wasn't much controversy in terms of umpires making calls, in terms of, like, calling a strike on a batter or calling a ball on a pitcher. The players were able to adapt pretty quickly, I think. And honestly, but they were strict in enforcing those rules, and they kept reminding the catcher, the clock, the pitcher, and stuff like that.
PJ Higgins, our guest from the Chicago Cubs on Inside the Clubhouse. Ryan Porce sitting in for David Haw this week. I'm Bruce Levine with you every week, 52 weeks out of the year, talking baseball here on The Score, Saturdays from 9 to 11. And PJ, being a winning ball player is something that people take an awful lot of pride in. When other players, managers, coaches point to a guy, they say, here's a guy that's a winning player. Not necessarily the guy that puts up the biggest numbers, not necessarily the guy that is getting all the attention, but the David Ross-type player on a team. Many of your teammates have pointed to your locker when they've come up and they've said to me, PJ is a winning player. He cares about his teammates. All he tries to do is help you win a ball game every day. How does that fly with you when you hear that? And also, how difficult do you think that is for Major League general managers to get their heads around, knowing that maybe the numbers aren't necessarily gaudy, but the results for the team are good?
I mean, just hearing that, I mean, that's an honor to be even recognized as being a winning baseball player. But, I mean, for me, how I go about my business and how I go about my game, I've been playing this game a very long time, and that's kind of how I approach it. I mean, I don't like sitting back there catching and trying not to win the game, you know? So there's a lot of energy wasted if you're not going to go out and try and win the game. And, I mean, that's why we play the game to begin with, and that's kind of how it was rooted into me when I was younger. So, but like I said, like, that's how I've always played the game in terms of execution. You do a hit and run, put a bunt down, move a runner. Like, that's just my mindset when I play the game, and I've been doing that my whole life, and I haven't changed, quite frankly. And to answer the second question, I mean, that's just honestly, like, that's out of my control. I mean, I'm going to play my game the way it is, and if the numbers aren't quite there, what people expect, and that it is. But I know I could go to sleep every night knowing that I gave it my all to try and win the game, help the team win.
PJ Higgins of the Chicago Cubs is here with us on Inside the Clubhouse on 670 The Score. All guests join us on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline, Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. PJ, this season for the Cubs, you've played first base, you've played catcher, you've played third base. What goes into learning all those different defensive positions to make sure that you're ready to go no matter, you know, what position David Ross calls upon you to play each day?
Honestly, just constant repetition of on days I don't play or days I do play. If I play first base, I'm going to go out and get ground balls and make sure I get all the reps and all the footwork things done that I need to do to make sure I'm ready to play that. If I'm going to play third, I'll do the same thing there. And catching, honestly, I probably do a lot more with catching bullpens and catching off the machine, make sure my blocking is good and watching video on that to make sure I'm still in tune with that. So, I mean, it's just a lot of repetition. And, I mean, I've done this a lot throughout my career, so the flexibility to bounce around. And if they need me here, I'm not caught on surprised by it. So I'm just kind of used to it at this point, if I'm being honest.
PJ Higgins of the Chicago Cubs has been our guest here on 670 The Score. PJ, Thank you so much for joining us this morning, and good luck this afternoon against the Rockies.
All right, thanks for having me, guys.
All right, PJ Higgins of the Cubs joining us here on Inside the Clubhouse. Bruce, yesterday the Cubs winning their fourth in a row, winning 2-1 against the Rockies. Today, they'll have Hayden Wesneski pitching. Should be an interesting afternoon for the Cubs to see the youngster who was in the trade with the Yankees back in July for Scott Efros, seeing his first start today at Wrigley.
Yeah, he pitched in relief and he pitched great the first time out. I think there's a tremendous amount of emphasis being put on young Cub pitching that the organization is starting to show. And we've seen a lot of guys like Assad come up and pitch well. It's good that they have these arms coming. And Wesneski today is going to be fun to watch. It gives the Cub fan base and the front office a lot of hope for the future. So I think people are looking forward to seeing more pitching in. As Hoyer said on numerous occasions, including last week, the rebuild is going to be built around starting pitching and arms in the organization coming through. They're not going to be paying $100 million of a payroll toward starting pitching like they did during the first rebuild.
For sure. Cubs-Rockies coverage coming up at 12:45 today with the pregame with Zach Zabin, 121st pitch over at Wrigley Field between the Cubs and the Rockies. Joe Maddon coming up at the top of the hour. We are very much looking forward to that. The former Cubs manager, now a free agent in the managing world. But coming up next, the Cubs do have 18 games left, but a lot of the chatter around the Cubs is the upcoming offseason. Matt Spiegel laid out his offseason plan yesterday on Parkins and Spiegel. We are going to react to that on Chin Music here on Inside the Clubhouse. I'm Ryan Porth, and for David Hall alongside Bruce Levine, you're listening to 670 The Score.
High and inside, Chin Music, a little Chin Music. Take that hitter for a ride.
It's time for some Chin Music.
Hey, how about a warning?
Sure. Watch out you don't get killed.
Because sometimes in baseball, you've got to send a strong message, especially when someone has it coming. Each Saturday, David and Bruce come in high and tight with a response to something that deserves one, like this.
You guys talk about it. Sign good players and then add them to other good players. Now, just quickly, they get Xander Bogaerts, who's a great, great hitter, and let him play shortstop initially, even though he shouldn't long-term. Then they'll move him to second base or third base. Carlos Rodon to front the rotation. I love Brandon Nimmo to play center field and lead off. I would love to see Brandon Nimmo get here. And then, like, guys like Christopher Morel and Patrick Wisdom are bench pieces, okay? They're extra depth pieces. And the big key to this working out for me is this kid Matt Mervis is given every chance to win the opening day first base job. And I think that dude is ready to freaking mash. And let's effing go. That is a team capable of a National League wild card spot. And if things break right, I think that is a team that is ready to hit spring training with contending as a legit possibility.
That was Matt Spiegel yesterday on Parkins and Spiegel, giving his 2022 Cubs offseason plan. As, again, 18 games left in the regular season for the Cubs, everyone talking and looking ahead to the offseason. So, Bruce, Spiegel laid out his plan yesterday for the Cubs to become a wild card team next year, and that is to go out in free agency and sign Xander Bogaerts at short, Brandon Nimmo at center field, and to bring in Carlos Rodon to be basically your ace of the rotation. Do you agree or disagree with Spiegel's take that is the winning game plan this offseason for the Cubs?
Well, I will say this. I'm going to take about 30 seconds out, call Tom Ricketts, and ask him if he can write a check for about $400 million for those three players. If he's ready to sign off on that. Some good points, some good players that will fit. I like the idea that you have to bring in the free agents at the right time, the right place. I'm not so sure this is the right time to bring in Carlos Rodon at age 30 and going through his first year since 2014 when he was a rookie.
of going through a full season without being injured. First year, okay? Ryan, injury every year. Certainly one of the top pitchers in the game. Again, last year he was an all-star. This year he's an all-star, one of the top left-handers in the game. He's going to walk away from $22 million because he can with the Giants in the second year of his deal. What is it going to take to sign Carlos Rodon to a long-term deal? Are you willing to put up 5 or 6 years at $25 million a year for Carlos Rodon? Same thing with Bogaerts. Are you ready at 31 to give him a $25 million contract times, what would you say, 6? So is this the right time to plug in the free agents? I like Matt's points. I'm not so sure 2023 is the year. If you look at the team right now, Ryan, look at the team on the field and look at the pitching staff and say, how many players are they away from being a contending team, which was Matt's premise? I would say they're more than 3 players away from being a contending team.
I would agree with that, although this second half of the season, you've seen some pieces for the Cubs where it's like, all right, some of these guys are going to be able to be key pieces for, say, like the next 3 to 5 years, but I don't know if they have enough of them to go out and spend money in free agency to surround them and then call yourself a bona fide playoff contender at that point. To me, I agree with you. You have to spend your money wisely in free agency. You just can't spend just to spend. If Trey Turner is out there, if the Dodgers let him get to free agency, Trey Turner is a guy that I feel very comfortable investing in. He's someone that can be your leadoff hitter for at least the next 5 years. He plays great ball. He's a great base runner. He's a great fielder. He's a great all-around player. The Dodgers would be stupid to let him walk because they've got Betts, Turner, Freeman atop that lineup, and that's pretty imposing. But if he's out there, Bruce, that's the guy that I'm targeting if I'm Jed Hoyer to bring in and make an impact on that team offensively and defensively.
Yep. You're going to have the $300 million ready for him?
Sure, sure. Okay. I will pull out my wallet right now, and we will take it over to Wrigley Field, over to Addison, and we will supply it to the Cubs, and they will be able to spend that money on Trey Turner this offseason.
Well, I love Turner, and I think he is an important player going forward for any organization. Is he ready to commit to the at this point of their rebuild? We'll see, but I don't think the Cubs will be afraid to sign a great player like him. The number is 312-644-6767. We're going to talk to Joe Madden next. Joe has a book out. It's called The Book of Joe, Trying Not to Suck at Baseball in Life. The only Joe Madden could have a book with that title on it. He'll be our guest next. And Ryan, looking forward to talking to Joe and doing the next hour of show with you.
Absolutely. More from Joe Madden, and we'll also get his take on Shohei Ohtani versus Aaron Judge in the AL MVP race as well. That's all coming up next. He's Bruce Levine. I'm Ryan Porth, in for David Hall on Inside the Clubhouse here on 670 The Score.
The results are in. Great conversations are always on par. So follow and listen to On Par with me, Maury Povich, wherever you get your podcasts.